You can see their faces or feel their faces on a bronze relief plaque on the wall of the chapel. Three models of courage and hope. Three martyrs for the right to vote. The plaque, the bronze plaque, is in the headquarters building of our Unitarian Universalist Association in Boston. Among many others murdered in the civil rights years are these three young adults, Viola Liuzzo and the Reverend James Reeb, both Unitarian Universalists, and Jimmy Lee Jackson, who was not a UU. All three perished in Selma 50 years ago. The civil rights movement was a black movement led by blacks and carried out by ordinary African Americans. Yet many white allies showed up and stood up along with them, some sooner, some later. It was events in Selma that brought Unitarian Universalists into participation as allies in that movement. In the summer of 1964, in the heat and humidity of the Deep South, volunteers were helping to register African Americans to vote. The recent movie, Selma, depicts the so-called literacy tests used by election officials to deny registration to blacks and to intimidate them. Hundreds of black and white volunteers came to help. This included several UU ministers, lay leaders, seminarians, and college students. After the summer, when many volunteers went home, white vigilantes attacked their black neighbors in reprisal for that activism. The Reverend Charles Blackburn from the UU Church in Alabama, in Huntsville, Alabama at the time, later recalled, "We received instructions on techniques for driving civil rights workers. Disconnect all interior lights of the car so as not to provide a clear target at night. Drive down the center of the highway to thwart moves to run you off the road." One day in a small Mississippi town, Blackburn escorted a 94-year-old black Baptist minister and his 80-year-old wife to the courthouse to register. He said, "We were arrested for trespassing on courthouse grounds." Registering to vote seems like such a simple matter these days, yet so many people choose to skip signing up. Today, half of those registered skip voting on election day. It is taken for granted and its power ignored. However, to people under the burden of oppression, voting can bring power, freedom, and pride. In 1965, the city of Selma had 30,000 people, half of them black, half of them white. On its voting rolls were 12,000 white voters and 325 black voters. For this reason, in January and February of 1965, there were three marches from a black church in Selma to the county courthouse. This led to arrests by police and assaults by newly deputized whites with cattle prods and billy clubs. A few days later, during an evening rally, Jimmy Lee Jackson, a young black veteran of the Army, was trying to protect his mother and grandfather while a state trooper was beating them. He was shot twice in the stomach and died a week later. The Sunday after his death, a Methodist minister called for a march from Selma to the state capitol in Montgomery. For the first time, dozens of white allies joined such a march. For the first time. Half of them came from three UU churches in other cities in Alabama. To leave Selma to go to Montgomery, you have to cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Standing at the base of it, you can't see over it. What awaited those 600 marchers on the other side were sheriff's deputies, deputized vigilantes, and state troopers, some on horseback. As recounted in a recent book by UU minister and scholar Mark Morrison Reed, these men charged, trampled, clubbed, and tear-gassed 600 peaceful marchers. Traumatized, the marchers turned back. Unlike other violence against peaceful protesters, this day, March 8th, known as Bloody Sunday, was covered by the newspapers and television. Early Monday morning, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. issued a telegram calling on clergy of all faiths to come to Alabama for another march to the capital city. The Unitarian Universalist Association, the UUA, wrote, was 4 years old at that time, since the Unitarians and the Universalists had just merged 4 years earlier in 1961. Dana Greeley, the president of the UUA, wrote instructions to the head of the Social Responsibility Department, quote, alert some of our men to go. He also instructed the UUA's district staff to telephone their ministers. Theodore Webb oversaw the churches in the Boston district. This was 5 years before Ted would become our minister here in Sacramento and move from Boston to Sacramento. Ted phoned the Reverend James Reeb, a young minister with whom he had had dinner the night before. Originally a Presbyterian minister, Jim Reeb had become a UU. He'd served on the staff of All Souls Church in Washington, D.C., and then served as a campus minister and then a community minister in poor neighborhoods in Boston. Reeb had just begun a job at the American Friends Service Committee. He felt called. He had to go to Selma. Some clergy couldn't afford to go. One of them was the Reverend Clark Olson, serving the new UU Fellowship in downtown Berkeley, California. Olson listened to Martin Luther King on the car radio, and he wanted to go. He arrived home to a message that a couple of church families would contribute money for his plane ticket. The movement's home base in Selma was an African Methodist Episcopal church known as Brown Chapel AME. On Monday night, it was packed. Clergy from all over the country began arriving at Brown Chapel, greeted by cheers as they entered. On Tuesday afternoon, the UU volunteers met together. The Reverend David Johnson, who had gone there from our Bloomington, Indiana church, has recalled, in less than 2 days, we had 1/10 of all our ministers in Selma. Yet he said there was no room for pride. We had come because we had to. We were late, very late, 12 years late. He noted that the first black voter registration drive had taken place in 1952. He said they were beaten into submission, beaten on street corners, on the steps of the courthouse, in their own churches, in their own homes. And we did not notice. Training for the next weekend's march included lessons in nonviolent resistance. The Reverend Ford Lewis, minister of this congregation at the time, was there. In a later sermon here, he said, we were told that if we were attacked, we should fall down in a fetal position, with our hands over our heads, curled up in a ball, with our legs crossed, and remaining in that position, praying as they beat upon us. A federal judge issued an order against the second march. The White House asked Martin Luther King not to move ahead. There were disputes among leaders of the civil rights movement. There was risk. Some people had been wounded in the previous march, yet they were ready to try again. Others had much to lose. For example, some UUs from Huntsville, Alabama, worked for the space program and had government security clearances. Marching in violation of a court order could cost them their jobs. And yet, people showed up for this second march. 2,500 people walked and sang, "Ain't gonna let nobody turn me round, turn me round, turn me round." One UU marcher has recalled walking between an old black man with his arm in a sling and a teenage boy with a bandage on his head. The road they walked was lined with police cars and Confederate flags and hecklers. A federal marshal interrupted and read the court injunction. Still, they marched over the bridge and they met a line of troopers blocking them. Martin Luther King kneeled to pray, and the line of troops opened up. Instead of moving forward, King turned around and led the marchers back to where they'd started, to Brown Chapel. Later, Dr. King explained that more white allies were on their way to Selma. It would bring more public attention, and it would make state police reluctant to attack the group if it was mixed. James Reeb and his wife, Marie, had four small children in Boston. She was not happy about his decision to go to Selma. Many church boards felt the same way about their ministers taking time away, while others were supportive. Many congregants said they had no business getting involved in civil rights work. Such ambivalence affected not only us, but every major denomination. That evening, ministers James Reeb, Clark Olson, and Orloff Miller, who worked for the UUA's campus ministry program, walked to a black-owned restaurant for dinner. After dinner, they took a shortcut back to Brown Chapel. Four white men followed them, calling them names. They kept walking. Clark Olson saw a club come down on Reeb's head. The gang threw the other two on the ground, began kicking them, then ran away. The attack lasted half a minute. Olson and Miller took Reeb to a black-run clinic, but it was clear he needed to be transported to the University Hospital in Birmingham. White men followed their ambulance, and then its tire blew out, and its radio would not work. It had to backtrack to get another ambulance. As the ministers waited with their injured friend in the ambulance for a second one to arrive, white men surrounded the car and banged on the windows. Clark Olson recalled, "We had no idea what they were going to do when Orloff and I had to get out of the car and move Jim's body to the second ambulance. One of them came up to me saying in a hostile tone of voice, 'Hey, what happened here?' All I could bring myself to say was, 'Please don't.' And they didn't stop us. There was no more hostility. Waiting to meet them at the hospital in Birmingham were FBI agents and news reporters. President Johnson sent yellow roses to the hospital. Reeb's wife and father were flown in from Boston. Reeb died of his brain injuries on Thursday. Around the country, marches, rallies, vigils, and memorial services took place in the days and weeks that followed. That summer, a new Unitarian Universalist fellowship was established in Sacramento, serving the southern area of town. Like some other congregations founded in those years, it was named the James Reeb Fellowship. On that Sunday morning, 3 days after his death, preachers replaced their sermons with memorial services. At the UU Church in Birmingham, the Reverend Larry McGinty pointed out that national attention surged after the sacrifice of this white minister. But there had been little notice weeks earlier when Jimmy Lee Jackson was shot by a trooper. McGinty said, "Jackson was a human being, as was James Reeb, and as you and I are. But he was not a human being to this nation, to Southerners or to non-Southerners. Here is the evil lurking in all of us, all across this country, north, east, south, and west. Indeed, a researcher in President Johnson's archives later found there had been 57 recorded phone calls to Johnson about Reeb's death, but there had been none about the death of Jackson. More allies arrived in Selma for a memorial service led by Dr. King and the UUA president and a rabbi, among others. Rallies took place constantly in Selma. UU minister James Hobart has recalled offerings being taken at those rallies in a very Baptist style. He said people came forth and placed their money or check in a basket held high by a tall and large black preacher. At one rally, Hobart said, a man came up and said, almost defiantly, that he and other atheists had taken up a collection totaling $5,000. Without any change of expression, the preacher looked out across the congregation and inquired, are there any other atheists here with $5,000? On Monday, President Johnson addressed the U.S. Congress and the nation, urging passage of the Voting Rights Act. He said this, at times, history and fate meet, at a single time in a single place, to shape a turning point in man's unending search for freedom. In Selma, Alabama, long-suffering men and women peacefully protested the denial of their rights as Americans. Many of them were brutally assaulted. One good man, a man of God, was killed. A third march to Montgomery was in the works, and federal court approval came on March 17th. The judge ruled that on the first and last days of the march, the number of marchers could be unlimited because they would be on a four-lane highway. But on the middle days of the week, the march would be limited to 300 people per day. To keep them safe, President Johnson federalized 1,800 Alabama National Guardsmen, added 2,000 more troops, and sent 100 FBI agents. For the full 50-mile march, organizers signed up 300 of those who previously had been beaten, jailed, tear-gassed, or otherwise brutalized. The only UU allowed to march was James Bell, a young adult African-American from a UU church in Philadelphia. But a UU seminarian from Chicago and a young minister from New York wanted to go on the whole journey, so they followed behind those 300 as uninvited guests. Every night, the marchers set up camp, often on muddy ground. They got up early every morning to march and rally again. To arrive in Alabama for the final day of the march, black volunteers and their allies from around the country chartered buses, trains, and planes. On the final day, the size of the march went up from its core of 300 people to 30,000. Among them were 250 UU ministers and 500 UU laypersons. The closing rally featured spirituals and patriotic songs. Dr. King proclaimed, "It was clear that segregation was on its deathbed in Alabama. And the only thing uncertain about it," he said, "is how costly the segregationists and Governor Wallace will make the funeral." Organizers had urged the marchers to be ready to get out of Montgomery before the National Guard left. After the rally, a young mother from Detroit shuttled carloads of marchers back to Selma. As she and a friend drove back to Montgomery for another carload, a car pulled up beside hers, and a man shot her and killed her. She was Viola Liuzzo. For just a year, she had been a new member of the UU Church in the city of Detroit. She had been taking her children to church there. Viola Liuzzo's husband was still Roman Catholic, and he didn't approve of her UU involvement or her driving to Alabama. In Detroit, he had a Catholic funeral mass for Viola, attended by the governor, president of the Auto Workers Union, and Dr. King, and 750 others. Leaders of the UUA sent letters of condolence to the husband for Viola's sacrifice. Two UU ministers called on Mr. Liuzzo at home, but he turned them away. It was not only Viola's husband who thought she had no business helping out in Selma. A few months later, a poll in the Ladies' Home Journal magazine revealed only 26% of U.S. women approved of her actions. Well, 55% disapproved. She was one of the few white women able to go who chose to go. She drove to Selma in response to her UU values and her faith community, which she had joined only a year earlier. It took years before our denomination recognized formally her sacrifice in service to our shared principles. Next weekend, Unitarian Universalists and leaders from other faith traditions will gather in Selma to remember all of the martyrs and all of the marchers and to march once again. In the spring of 1965, all those travelers to Selma wouldn't know how long they'd be there. Clark Olson, the minister from Berkeley, had packed a suitcase with one change of clothing. They wouldn't know if they'd still have a job back at home. But neither did the marchers from Alabama. At least 200 African Americans in Alabama did lose their jobs as punishment for participating. The travelers couldn't know whether they would be safe. Dick Leonard, a young minister of religious education from New York, packed his bag and left instructions for his memorial service, just in case. The Alabama demonstration not only changed U.S. laws, it was a turning point in the life of our very white religious denomination. As Mark Morrison Reed has noted, given the minuscule size of Unitarian Universalism compared to other faiths, we were well represented. We continue to struggle and work toward more inclusion in our ministerial ranks and in our congregations. The Selma story is too rich for one sermon. And of course, the stories and the struggle for racial justice have continued well beyond 1965. There are so many perspectives to consider, so many points for discussion. For now, I take two lessons from this 50-year-old story. The first is one of humility. The leaders and the foot soldiers of the civil rights movement did not always agree on their strategies or goals. They could not be certain about their chances for success or their survival. Yet their faith in a better future called to them. It kept them going. The Unitarian Universalists who joined in the struggle in Selma learned to approach the struggle not as wise rescuers or as saviors, but as allies, willing to learn from those demanding justice, willing to lend their voices and their bodies. Those Unitarian Universalists were not perfect people who didn't make mistakes, just ordinary people. Yet they showed up. And that's the second lesson, showing up. No matter how imperfect we are, or how uncertain, we can choose to learn, to stretch ourselves, and to show up when asked. If we feel a calling to show up somewhere, we can show up. If called to stand up, then stand up. To speak out, then speak out. To give, then give. In the days to come, may we not let the calling be unheard or unheeded. If we are invited to support others in fulfilling their own call to show up, let us do what we can to support them. May we not let the invitation go unheard, not let such a calling go unheeded. In the days to come, let us go forward in memory and in gratitude. By our words and by our deeds, let us give thanks for the gifts of hope and courage we have received. Give thanks for all the gifts that make life worth sharing. So may it be. Blessed be, and amen.